Surviving the hippies, the Bay of a Bus, attacks of the sharks, and the self-righteous. Artists, writers, thinkers, and they live to tell about it. Russ and Tori Taff, right now.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
Last week, we gave you an inside look at Russ and Tori Taff's beginnings of their life together, marriage at quite a young age, to be honest, and some of the struggles they went through during those early times. But the profundity that came out of all of that is what we have today before us, with great songwriting, great wit, and, well, deep thoughts for the Christian faith. And we're going to pick back up where Tori left off last week, part one, kind of as at a teaser point, where we were talking about buzzwords that are going around with today's society, like vulnerability, authenticity, being real and relevant, and find out her thoughts on all of that. Her finger is on the pulse, by the way, so she should know. Before we get to that, though, I want you to hear some brand new sounds from Russ Taff and this brand new project that's coming out, recorded in the Faroe Islands. Russ and Tori Taff, my guest today on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Rolled out of bed, already coming from behind. I live in my head, moving too fast to see the signs. Coming unglued, not enough hours in the day. Lip service to you, still gonna do it my own way. But when I'm running in circles and I've lost my purpose, you could lift me higher, changing my point of view. Looking down, I can see you everywhere. Keep lifting me higher, won't go back no more. I know what I know, don't even try to change my mind. I like the status quo, the way we've done things is just fine. So sure that I'm right, can't see the forest for the trees. It's black or it's white, don't wanna care about in between. But when I don't wanna listen, you get my attention. Lifting me higher, changing my point of view. Looking down, I can see you everywhere. Keep lifting me higher, won't go back no more. Won't go back no more. Lifting me higher, won't go back no more.
Russ Taff here on Daniel Britt and Friends. I want to go back and replay the setup question that we ended with last week, and then let Tori really dive in and unpack the question about relevancy, authenticity. This is how we ended part one with Russ and Tori Taff here on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Do you think the Christian and gospel market is in danger of being lost because of its being irrelevant in this postmodern world? Or do you think that they're, I mean, as we talked about having to say something in a fresh way, And I guess this is the thing. What I've heard, and you can you probably get your finger on the pulse of this new generation that we're in. If you're authentic about it, they'll listen to you. If you're trying to fake it, or if you're trying to do some kind of formula and doing it by ritual, they don't want any part of that. If you can be authentic and real and whatever those terms mean, they'll listen to you. And sometimes that means looking them in the eye and telling them where you really messed up and you know where you really blew it. Do you see that being true today in the circles you run in?
Well, I do. The buzzwords right now are authenticity and transparency and community, and there's a lot of talk about that in all sort of levels. I was just at a conference, and one of the keynote speakers is a woman named Brené Brown, who is a researcher by trade and an author. And she is not a Christian speaker, but she is a speaker and writer who is a Christian. And her she has a book out, but her main thrust, after she was researching for started out being for several years, ended up being a 10-year research thing. She was wanting to research connection between people, connection between. But what happened is she got derailed in her research, because what she hit when she started researching connection was stories about shame. And when she started researching shame, what she started finding are these people that she calls wholehearted people, for lack of a better term. She coined that one. And that the underlying thing in all of these people that were able to live life with their whole heart was vulnerability and being able to be comfortable with their vulnerability. I think that we're all, Christian and non-Christian, are so hungry for the kind of authenticity that comes when somebody's willing to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I think that that whether it's in songwriting or whether it's in sitting across a Starbucks table with someone or in a marriage, or I think the power of being able to be seen. And of course, the best way for that to happen is for us to be comfortable letting God see us and feel seen and known by Him. But I think that those words are floating around a lot because people are so hungry for that. There's so much that is inauthentic. There's so much that isn't real, or that there's so much that you see that isn't the whole picture, that I think we're starving for something that feels real.
So when an artist calls or you are talking and the phrase comes up, used to fill arenas but don't anymore, or what used to work isn't working anymore.
Right.
Is this type of stuff that artists seem to be struggling with? They're trying to figure out a way. How do you be vulnerable as a Christian artist and keep your job?
Right.
Well, there's vulnerable.
That's good.
There's vulnerability and there's vomiting forth everything that ever happened to you.
Right.
It's sort of there's vulnerability and then there's no filter.
Yeah, right,
so there can be a vast difference. But like anything else, I started smiling when you were talking, because what I started thinking is, if we could figure out how to do that and fill arenas, or how we could play vulnerability, or how you can manufacture authenticity.
Yeah, right.
There would be somebody who would package it, write a book about it, get on the, open a website, and so I think that what used to work doesn't necessarily still work stylistically, but what people respond to, I don't think has changed.
Some people say three strikes, then it's over. Keep messing up and you're out of the game. But I believe God never gives up on you. I happen to know He never lets go. He lifted me high. I found. No, I won't let it get me down. Cause I know that is love
Russ Taff, new sounds here on Daniel Britt and Friends, visiting with Russ and his wife, Tori, and the perfect segue from our last topic of vulnerability.
All right, let's talk about getting locked under the bus. This story has made the rounds.
Okay, I was not there. Lord. I had nothing to do with this.
You weren't. And we've heard, I think we've heard Russ's take.
My hands are clean.
And everybody who was there that day rolling down the interstate, we've heard their take. How did you hear about it, Tori?
I think I actually heard about it from Russ first.
I did. I told you.
You did. Honey, there's nothing.
Tell me, it's going to embarrass me. Information to
Well, actually, as I recall, you told me and you were laughing your head off because you knew I would think it was tremendously funny.
That was very funny.
I did, because you were safe and sound. Blah, blah, blah. Actually, it was funny, regardless. But then I started hearing, then Bill called me. Because Bill thought it was just as funny, and he didn't trust you to tell me. So I think I heard about it second from Bill, and then I heard about it from everybody else in the free world.
It could have happened to anybody.
It's exactly. Yeah.
Of course, it never did. But it could have. Let's say Larry was never locked under the bus.
He's too loud. If Mark left the room, people would notice.
That's right. That's right. And then one of the very few, if not the only, shark attacks off the coast of Myrtle Beach. Oh, I mean, who gets attacked by sharks in
Apparently,
Myrtle Beach?
The fruit of our loins.
Isn't that right? It's in South Carolina, right? Somewhere off the coast.
It was north of North Myrtle Beach.
Yeah.
Yes.
And was it Jaws and her? As she recounts, or was it just like, whoa,
depends on who's telling it.
That's a big jellyfish.
Oh gosh.
Well, the we looked at her foot when we got her to the emergency room. And another engine would have had a whole foot in its mouth. But the doctor who looked at it, he had the double layer of teeth.
It was like a dental impression on the bottom of her foot. It was so creepy.
And the doctor said it was probably about 5 feet long.
Which is how tall. This is our daughter, Maddie Rose, who was 15 at the time.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, I'm sitting on the beach, and both my daughters in the water. They're only, like, waist deep. It's not like they're out there.
Scuba diving.
And I had a book, and I'm sitting there on the beach, and they're playing in the water, surfing on the little boards. And boogie boards. And Maddie comes walking out of the water, and Charlotte, and the blood is,
it's so gross. It took a chunk. He took a chunk of my daughter. My daughter's DNA.
And she calmly walked out of the water.
She
was hopping. And Charlotte, her younger sister by 4 years, was walking beside her, lecturing her, because Maddie's first impulse was that she yelled across to Charlotte, I think a jellyfish, no, I think a crab bit me. And then Charlotte took one look at it and said, no, it couldn't possibly have been a crab, because a crab would have held on, and I think this was a shark. So as Maddie was hopping and bleeding, and Charlotte was walking alongside of her lecturing, Maddie's looking at her going, you watch way too much Animal Planet. And then the best part of that is that when we got home and everyone we came in contact
with. Let's just say it was scary.
It was scary. Everyone we came in contact with would say, I've lived here, fill in the blank, 30 years, and I've never seen a shark bite. That's a shark bite.
Yeah.
So when we were finally home, safe and sound, and back in Nashville, and it hit the local news because I was a blogger for the Tennessean at the time and wrote about, you're not going to believe this.
Right.
And so we had this brief flurry of media activity where they showed up, news crews showed up in our, she had her 15 minutes and it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
But very earnestly, Maddie looked into the camera and said, well, I thought that my initial thought is that it was probably a crab or a giant clam. And I'm behind the camera going, giant clam. And Charlotte says, you watch way too much SpongeBob.
That's funny. That's good. And the miracle in all of this is that Mama wasn't around, and it was up to Daddy to get her to...
Mama got there fast. Oh, Mama was upstairs. Okay. I was making... I was upstairs in the condo making chicken and dumplings, as one is wont to do, at the beach. And I get a phone call from Russ that said, Tori, I think you need to get down here. We're going to need to get Maddie to an emergency room. She's okay. Yeah. And then the second part of that sentence was, but it looks like she's been bitten by a shark. So I spent the first 3 minutes going, are you kidding? Are you kidding? Are you kidding? But, yeah, she's very sad now. It's 3 years later, and she's very sad that her scars are fading.
Oh.
But it was the best ever what I did on my summer vacation story. She can dine out on that for life.
For Discovery or Nickelodeon.
Exactly. She actually got interviewed also by a magazine in, was it Norwegian magazine? I can't remember.
It was Australia.
No, there was, there, well, that as well. There was there's a shark watch where they contacted you.
Okay.
But then there was an interview that was all in Norwegian. Of a, and all you see is blah, 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 Rust Tab, blah, 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 daughter, Maddie.
A big clam shell.
Yeah, big, giant clams.
Giant clam.
Happened while he was under the bus.
Yeah, right. Hey, throw that in. RustTab.com.
That would have been a so much better story.
Picture Moses by the Red Sea shore. Pharaoh knows he can't run no more. Water is way too deep and wide. They can't swim and they can't hide. Though he was just a man, Moses raised his hand and the Lord came through. He heard their cry. When hope was gone, he turned the tide. You can shake your head, but you know it's true. When there was no other way, the Lord came through. A king Darius and all his men. Poor Daniel in the lion's den. He'd done no crime, but he had to pay. I thought prayer to the Lord 3 times a day. At the break of dawn, they came looking for his gun, but the Lord came through. Those stories gathered dust upon the shelf, till I fell into a trap I made myself. And all my struggling only brought more pain. And I knew that I could never break those chains. But the Lord came through. He rescued me. He broke the lock. Shatters all your dreams
and your hopes have been cruelly crushed by Satan's manifested schemes, and you feel the urge within you to submit to earthly fear. Don't let the faith you're standing in seem to disappear. Praise the Lord. He will work through those who praise Him. Praise the Lord. For our God inhabits praise. Praise the Lord. For the chains that seem to bind you serve only to remind you that they drop powerless behind you. Now Satan is a liar, and he wants to make us think that we are paupers when he knows himself. We're children of the King. So lift up the mighty shield of faith, for the battle must be won. We know that Jesus Christ has risen, and the work's already done.
Russ Taff, you're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and not only are we talking to Russ today on the show, but we're continuing in this two-part series with Russ's wife, Tori.
Tori, okay, you mentioned that you do the blogging thing and you have the baby bloomer. Is that where you're in Homecoming Magazine?
Is
on there?
I'm a feature writer for Homecoming. I have a column there, and then I'm blogging, and then I also provide some content for Gaither.com. And lately, Bill and the gang have pulled me in. I'm now doing Homecoming Radio. I am the token chick in Homecoming Radio, which
soft
is
feminine side.
Pretty much my job description.
Which I think is brilliant, because when I heard that they were bringing you in, I thought it was great. Well, let me ask just some questions that people like to hear answered. Money, bargaining. Who's the spender in the family? Between the two of you, I guess, and who's always like running after you, this back, we don't need this, you spent way too much money.
Let me tell you what we did. This is the secret of a 34-year marriage. We successfully figured this out early on. We hired a business manager. His name is Zach Lichtman. Exactly. He's my Jewish mother. He lives in L.A., and so we can unite in our irritation with Zach, who calls us both and goes, "Do you know how much you spend at Walmart this month? What can you get at Walmart?" And so we can both look at each other going, "That's Zach."
Yeah.
And we don't, that's the one thing we've never thought about.
You just blame Zach.
Exactly.
Zach says we got to cut this out.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Or,
and we unite against him. We're like kids at home. Gosh, Zach needs to get off our back. Shut up, Zach.
Are you a bargainer, though? Do you find good deals and just...
Is cheap the word you're groping for?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, pretty much.
Let's say last night she was cutting coupons out of the paper.
Really?
Okay,
really?
That's new because while I am cheap, I'm also incredibly disorganized. So I have cut them out before, but then I lose them.
That's right.
But I'm trying to be better. No, I love... I come from a... And I've taught it to my girls. Maddie Rose was at Goodwill yesterday looking for... She's going to go to Mexico City with her dad tomorrow. She was looking for a... For something to wear at Goodwill, which for a teenage girl, you gotta love that.
That's pretty impressive.
What is it for, this race I'm running? And what is my reward if I strive for the silver, go for the gold? For all that I know, as far as I see, I feel it slipping through my fingers like sand, meaningless. I heard the teacher say, the way the ones I love are taken away. God help me see, help me believe, help me believe. What is it for, this life I'm living? Is my whole story told with a head of silver and a heart made of gold? For all that I see from here where I stand, you know it's slipping through my fingers like sand, meaningless. I heard the teacher say, the way the ones I love are taken away. God help me see, help me believe, help me, help me.
Truly Wed Celebrity Edition. We've got Russ and Tori Tapp here. And so here are the questions. I'm going to ask it of Russ. But Tori tells us after he answers...
I get to rebut?
If he's right or wrong.
All right. We need a buzzer.
However, location or general vague remembrance or whatever. Ooh. First kiss. Where was the first kiss?
I wish you could see it. Just a shame this is radio. You should have seen his face. He just, did that. Oh, my gosh, I don't know.
Oh, we've been married 34 years.
That didn't,
I'm thinking about kisses, but was it you or someone else?
That's right.
Was it good?
I remember
it was me.
At seventh grade, but that wasn't you.
No, that wasn't me.
Where where, your first guess. Yeah, the two of
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Okay.
He can't remember. I'm not saving him on this one. You're on your own.
It's called stalling.
That's exactly right. Look at his face. We need a big tick-tock.
Do I lie or do I tell the
truth? Well, considering I'm here, I'm thinking lying is not going to work.
It wasn't on the first day because...
No. Because I wasn't, you know, a skank.
You were
Pentecostal. I was afraid I'd scare you.
That's right. It had to be like at least the third or fourth day because you were still trying to decide if you liked me or the other guy that you had been dating for so long.
Yeah.
So it had to be somewhere along the way.
I remember his first kiss.
Oh, well.
You want to know the honest truth? I'm not exactly. It may have been on West Mountain when he took me. Parking. I'm sure he intended it to be a Bible study.
Christian stuff.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think it was. I really do. I think it was. It's sad that neither one of. I think it was there.
Yeah.
I can't. But I, what I do remember is the first "I love you" because that came from me, and I remember that distinctly. I don't know if there was any kissing involved, but I was in the car and you were taking me home.
Okay.
I could say anything now, and he's going to agree.
That's right.
And there were unicorns. And
okay.
God, we stink.
No, this is good. Okay, this question is typically asked of the man, and then the woman gives the right answer. I'm going to flip it around this time.
Oh, geez.
Okay, so, Tori, if it was up to Russ, and you could have a second honeymoon anywhere in the world, and money was no object, and it was just going to be just the most exotic, or maybe not. Where would he pick that to be?
Spend
a week or two.
Specifically, it would probably be someplace warm and sunny and with a beach. But I know that there's certain places in the world that he specifically, particularly loves that aren't necessarily sunny and warm with a beach. One of them is the Faroe Islands. It's the most beautiful. It looks like Narnia. It's some islands. It's where he actually recorded his record that will be released in the next couple months. It's a gorgeous place, but I think probably it would be someplace warm and sunny and with a beach. The correct answer to this, Russ, would be yes, indeed, Tori, you're exactly right. Let's go tomorrow.
Well, the place that I have been threatening to take you for, like, milestones of art.
Oh, that's true.
Is, and I want to do it, we're coming up on 35, is Paris. We have been all over Europe.
Yeah.
But for some reason, there we've talked about Paris and the Louvre, and we have played with that for several years. So I would say, of course,
that was a good idea. Do they have warm beaches in Paris?
In the summer, I'm sure.
No, you know what? You're exactly right.
Wow, good.
You said that a lot. I'd like that too. The cackle of triumph. You skunked me.
One of these would be easy for you to answer, Russ, but we're going to make you do...
Uh-oh.
Should we do three? Let's do three.
Let's go for it.
Oh, Lord.
What are who are three of Tori's best friends? And if you want to protect their identity, you can just use their first name.
Yeah. For years, it has been Bonnie King. Remember Bonnie from First Call?
I do, yeah.
They have been friends for years and years and years.
Aren't you sisters?
I think we are. I'm shocked that I'm not 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
When I stand next to her, I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Another one of her best friends would be our doctor, John Shaw. We go on vacation stuff together, but they talk every day. So
well, not John. It would actually be his wife, Lynn.
Lynn Shaw.
Although, yeah, I like John, too. But no, Lynn and I.
Yeah.
Lenny.
And a third best friend. I'm sitting here monitoring, you know, because you talk on the phone to them, and I got the first two, but a third, you wouldn't talk to them every day, but I might say your sister Carolyn or your sister Liz.
Ding, ding, ding. You're exactly right. Look at that.
That's
exactly right.
Lord, help me walk another mile, just one more mile. I'm tired of walking by myself. me smile, another smile, just one more smile. I know I can't make it on my own.
Sounds from Russ Taff here on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Help me then in every tribulation, so to trust thy promises, O Lord, that I lose not faith, sweet consolation.
The moment. promised land.
Sounds from Russ Taff's new project. Songs he's poured his life into, as any artist does, with passion, wanting to make a statement. Russ and Tori Taff are my guests today on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Album cuts on your album, Russ. And typically, albums go through marketing teams, and you have 10 or 12 songs on an album, and what, 3, 4 maybe ever see the light of day?
Maybe, yeah.
You know, to radio, marketed, right. Promoted. What song on any of your albums, it can be your newest one or the last one or 1 year ago, do you wish?
Oh, that's a good question.
Would have been singled or more time spent on in hindsight. That was just your favorite, but the marketing people, they said, no, we're going to go with this one instead.
Yeah.
Favorite album cut that maybe people have forgotten about?
Album cut. These are hard, Daniel.
He's acting like you're going to get it wrong.
I wish this show wasn't so big.
I know.
I'm trying to really cooperate here.
Okay, we'll do like the Nancy Reagan thing, like I already did, and I'll start whispering stuff to you, and then I'll do it on the side of my mouth. And
well,
then
I'm thinking of one, and well, yeah, that would be. But I was thinking of several. There was that song "Table in the Wilderness." It was on the Way Home record that. And I still get requests for that today,
right,
but you're right. I mean, you know, you have a record and they'll pull maybe two, maybe three, mm-hmm. And like the Metals record, I think they wound up with 6, but that was such a hot record for the time. But most time you get 2 songs,
right?
That the company works. But back then, you know, I remember when Metals came out, and I'll just throw this out there, you can edit it or whatever, but that record was out for 1.5 years before they really started working it. It was A&M. You know, today you got 4 months.
Right.
You know, or less.
30 minutes.
And it's over. But back then, it was just a different time. And it was just a different animal. But I would say Table in the Wilderness. And I want to say I still believe. I know they worked that as a single and it made it to radio. But at the time, it wasn't popular.
Hmm.
At the time. Because it dealt with a disappointment and fear and, you know, a guy falling. And
right.
But I still believe.
Right.
And out of all the songs and stuff, that one, it was just such a timely thing for me. But when it came out of the shoot, it was like the culture wasn't ready for something like that. They wanted to hear something else from me.
It was a little raw.
Very raw. Because I remember when we did that record, and one of the first things she said
that.
Is, you sure you want to be this honest? Because, you know, we're talking about Christian artists, and we're supposed to paint this front, and
right,
we stand up
right,
there, and,
right, right.
You know, we're examples of, you know, somebody that's doing it right.
Exactly.
But I like what Lowry says all the time. He says, he's standing up there in front of the audience, and he said, the only difference between me and you is I've got the microphone.
Right.
But that right. song today still, and so many pastors around the country, they were in Bible school or going through a hard time, and that lyric hit, but I just always felt like that should have been a big, but when it came out, another song would be Believe in Love. I got to know that you believe. Mm-hmm. And radio didn't like it. They said it was just too passionate. And I thought, well, God.
Odd choice of words.
But again, 1988.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
right.
And
yeah.
they say it's just too passionate for what we're trying to do.
Interesting.
But and then you would have songs that would hit. And you would just go, my Lord, how did that ever happen?
Right.
I thought that was an album cut.
Yeah, right, right.
And it just... So anyway.
Well, in my mind, and I'm not an artist, but I would think, gosh, you put your life into something, and you're investing, and you're orchestrating, and you produce this whole 12-song album, and you, it's your baby. But then they only pick 3 out of the 12. So kind of after a while, does it get a little bit discouraging, like... all these great songs, and they're only picking these 2 or 3. Does it give you, is it, fast forward to today in this iTunes kind of world,
yeah.
It's almost back to a single cycle.
Oh, yeah.
I was in a store the other day, and I saw they actually had some CDs in the store, but they were just kind of 3 or 4 mm-hmm. CD albums. So there you can focus on maybe just the hits or something. I don't know. Is it a new day in music? I mean, what's your new album going to be like when it comes out?
Well, the goals going into this with the producers that I used was to go back to the passion of the 80s and 90s. And that's what we tried to do. But yet, you know, a large part of my audience is homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
A large part of the audience is the people that were in school or, you know, in the 80s and 90s. And I think we're hitting both markets.
But ultimately, it's always the art versus commerce thing. It's always, are you going to make pure art and just something that you're going to enjoy for yourself?
Right, right.
Or are you going to want to find something that hopefully other people will like as well? I mean, it's the eternal struggle.
Yeah.
But we all, I mean, even like you, you know, we were talking earlier, and you were talking about a show and that you pour yourself into, and you know when it's going to air.
Right,
and when it, and,
right.
And you know, some guests will attract more listeners than other guests, but as an artist, as a singer,
right.
the songs
right.
that I believe in, I can stand up and sing them,
yeah,
you know, and I'll do it in Mexico City in a couple of days, whether it was the number one hit or not. I mean, people still want to hear the hits,
right?
And you give it to them,
yeah.
But there are those times, because for years with the record company, you know this business, you know it as well as I do. When you go in, you've got so many people in the studio, you got marketing, you got radio. And it's money. Money's, you know, you've got to sell. Yeah, I mean, we're sitting in a label here that I'm on. If I don't sell,
yeah, right.
our next interview next year might be at Starbucks.
It'll be a card table
right.
in a tent.
But the thing that, and you know, the call of God's on your life, too, and you feel this, you follow your heart.
Right.
You follow what you're supposed to do. And if it sells, I believe it will. If you know, and I've always said, if you like it, if I like it, someone will like it.
Right, right.
But the thing with our culture that, and this Nashville, this town has been doing it for years. And I mean, you know, something hot will hit. I remember when Garth Brooks hit,
mm-hmm.
and Garth is unique. Mm-hmm. He's Garth, and all the labels, you know, instead of going out there and trying to find somebody that was unique and different, you know, they tried, well, we've got to get the next Garth Brooks.
Right, right.
And now I feel like gospel's doing the same thing.
Right.
You know, is Jeremy Campbell. Well, we've got to get another Jeremy. And so instead of looking for that person that carries the anointing, that carries that passion,
right.
But this just totally different. And even your show, I mean, it's so successful that I'm sure there's other stations. So, well, we got to do like this. Instead of, you know what, we're all created uniquely different. We're all created. And if when we lock into that, I mean, God can use that to a great degree.
Yeah.
But, and I, you know, and I'll just throw this out. I love recording for Bill's label.
Right.
Because Bill, to me, is old school.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll call and he'll say, are you having fun? And I say, yeah, well, it's going to be good then.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not like, well, you know, radio is breathing down our neck. We, you know, and we don't know.
Right.
And so there is a good balance between art and commerce.
Exactly.
With this sort of thing, mm-hmm. with Barry and Paul and them. There is that good balance, but they understand art.
They understand artists too.
Mm-hmm. And they understand artists. And hopefully you'll give them two or three.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
they can take to the, you know, to the radio and everything else. But I don't know. It's going to be very, very interesting watching this town with iTunes and different things that's happening. And everybody's trying to figure out how we're going to survive.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
How are we going to survive? Because it's a whole new age. It's a new time. And I'm guilty. I mean, you know, I'd much rather go to iTunes instead of going by and bringing back everybody. I'll just go to iTunes. And you know, but people ask me all the time, well, what do you love about the Gaither crowd? And it's because they don't know how to download it.
They still buy the CD.
They still come to my table and buy that CD.
And
I love them.
She had albums.
That's right.
I love them for that.
Well, I don't know that we were expecting that, but I love that phrase, art and commerce. When we set out talking here, we were going to talk about a lot of stuff, and I'm glad it ended there because I think that's opened a lot of, you know, especially for people who aren't in the industry. I think that speaks volumes because people like it's so much more contagious to hear somebody talk on a subject that you may have no interest in if they're passionate about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of key in music as well.
So. Well, I was listening to an interview with Bill, you know, of course, he's big brother to a whole lot of us,
right.
and you included. But I was listening to an interview, and they said, are you a minister or are you an entertainer? And he went, yes, next question.
That's all right.
That's the art and commerce question.
There you go.
I've heard it said that love is blind. It's never afraid and never unkind. And I've heard it said love is all you need. That it's a many splendor days. I've heard people say that love at first sight, how it's so wrong and how it's so right.
This is Daniel Britton, friends.
Jesus said, I did not come to condemn. And I'm so glad about it. And sinners are turned into children again. And I'm so glad about it. All my sins have been buried at sea, and I'm so glad about it. And he said a treasure is hidden in me, and I'm so glad about it. I sing. Nothing can keep me from my Father's love. I'm so glad about it. Nothing below or nothing above, and I'm so glad about it. He said, just have to finish this race, and I'm so glad about it. He said that he's gone to prepare me a place, and I'm so glad about it. I'm glad.
Russ and Tori Taff on Daniel Britt and Friends. Hey guys, thanks for taking time with us today. This was a busy. You're heading out of the country tomorrow, and so this was very gracious of you. And you've got people painting your house or doing something. You got chaos.
we always have chaos
in paradise there. But
kids, friends coming over, and everything else.
Yeah, happy dogs. It's a scene.
Well, Tori, we'll keep watching your writing, and we'll look for the new album. When is it released, Russ?
I believe they're talking maybe April to May, somewhere in there.
And rusthalf.com online for you.
Yep.
And Baby Bloomer with no E.
I dropped an E willy-nilly. I have no idea why. Yeah.
Baby Bloomer.
I'm a late-blooming baby bloomer.
.com.
There you go.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews, again, online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.